This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff Landau. If you were expecting Richard Bradbury, you won't hear him today. No, you would be hearing him on Monday. He's away on some private island, apparently. I'm joined in the studio together with
Majida Hashim,
Arvind Yuvraj.
And on the show today, we will be talking about why Earth may not be a place that we could live for very long. Mm. And because it's not a place that we could live for many years to come, we are actually sending out signals to reach out for
SOS.
It's literally an SOS. It's an emergency signal.
Fun Friday.
Fun Friday, indeed.
There is hope.
There is hope. There is hope. In the near future, you might be. You might want to look at China if you're a startup, because they're spending a lot of money and they're building a lot of cool startups. Majida's got a story on that. And then, because it's Fun Friday, we will end with a fun story. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about drones.
Mm-hmm. Competitive drones.
Competitive drones and how they work. But anyways... And then also, oh, of course, it's Friday, so we will talk about some of the podcast recommendations that we have been doing over the past week. But let's start off with, I like to say that he's probably one of the visionaries that I really admire, Stephen Hawking. And he's always warning about, you know, humanity, which I find it a bit baffling, because for many, many years now, he's been, he keeps going on about, you know, we're destined to doom by AI, and you know, and aliens are, you know, they're real and they're gonna, you know, come for us. And now, or recently, during a presentation on Tencent's Web Summit in Beijing, he said that basically, if humanity doesn't become a fully space-faring species in the next 5 centuries or so, we may well go extinct. He's saying this because the ever-rising human population and its mounting energy needs will basically render Earth uninhabitable by the year 2600. And this is according to the newspaper from the UK. Hawking also therefore suggested that we get our act together and, as the Star Trek theme would normally say, go, you know, boldly go where no one has gone before. So during his talk, Hawking also highlighted that the exploration of the potential breakthrough Starshot, which is funded by Yuri Milner, which if you've seen the Paradise Papers, his name is mentioned very often here. So it's a $100 million project that aims to develop tiny unscrewed sail-equipped probes that will accelerate to about 20% of the speed of light by powerful lasers. And such nanocraft could get to Mars in less than an hour. So theoretically, fly by the closest explore planet to Earth, possibly the habitable Proxima B, which I think about earlier this year, we talked about Proxima B. I think it was on one of the show with Matt. It was one of the planets that is very closely to like Earth, looks like Earth, but it's and it's the closest to Earth, but it's still a million miles away.
It's in some other solar system or something like that.
4.2 light years away from us. But with something like this, it could actually make a space journey of just within 20 years. It's still far-fetched, of course, but I don't know. Like, I think there is some fact in the sense that, you know, there is an ever-rising of, you know, human population and also our energy needs. Hence, we're looking at alternative energy sources. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find ways to, you know, gather the sun and, you know, do solar, do wind, you know, do everything and try to get the, you know, energy levels, you know, in a sustainable way.
Yeah, the COP summit is happening right now anyway. And there's a lot of talk about whether or not we will reach the targets of the Paris Agreement. And there are some people very optimistic about it. You have Germany, you have France, but you also have at the same time the US drawing out of it, right?
Yeah.
So we don't know. It goes round and round. But Stephen Hawking literally said that the Earth is going to be a ball of fire. It is literally a ball, and it's all in flames and fire by 2617. That's that's the year 2617. Ball of fire versus let's go and find another planet to live on.
You just take option B, la, and not go find for another planet.
Definitely go find another planet.
Aircraft, start building everything now.
Yeah, but if you look at all these visionaries, Elon Musk and, you know, Richard Branson, and then you've got Stephen Hawking, they all seem to be heading in that direction that, you know, Earth, where we live now, is just not good enough for the future.
Yeah, you've seen the theory, isn't it? Like where some people said Mars might have been Earth millions and millions of years ago, and then now it's Mars. Some people are saying that Mars is pre-Earth, where it'll become Earth in the like millions or billions of years in the future. So we don't know which one. If it was Earth before, then you have to wonder like what happened to it, like what happened to Mars, right? Like what happened to all its water and its life and stuff. But also interesting is that Stephen Hawking and people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think Carl Sagan before, he said that we may never find another planet or we may never find aliens because we are just too small. Yeah. We don't know like how big the universe is. So even if you keep traveling, it's like an ant in a playground. It'll never be able to find like another city outside the playground city because it's just impossible. It's too much to travel.
Having said that though, like, you know, we've always been trying to, you know, listen to signals from outer space. You know, we've got a whole bunch of, you know, I think in the US they've got a whole bunch of research being done into you know, space communication, trying to talk to aliens or trying to get information from the outer space to listen into what the universe is talking. Interestingly, now we're going the other way around. We've decided to like, hey, you know what? Instead of us just waiting here and, you know, just waiting for a signal, we're going to send a signal out instead. So that's what astronomers have actually done. They've sent out a radio message to a neighboring star system, one of the closest known to contain a potentially habitable planet, and it's nearby enough that we could actually receive a reply in less than 25 years.
Whoa.
But the thing is, though, I'm not quite sure if us sending a signal out to this star that has, you know, that is like as close to, you know, perhaps that has like some habitable species of whatever species, I don't think they would understand the message that they received as well, because you know, our message could be really dumb compared to, you know,
I'm wondering what message did we say, what was our first word to the universe
and,
out
and
there?
What language?
Help.
What
language? Help.
Please get us off this planet.
So the target star is known as JG273. It's also known as the Luton star. It's a red dwarf in the northern Castellan of the Canis Minor. It's just 12 light years away, so not too far away. In March this year, it was discovered to have two planets. One of them is known as the JG 273b, and it orbits within the star's habitable zone and could potentially harbor liquid water, which presents life.
Source of life, yeah.
So this is actually sort of like, it's like a mission to, this sort of, this missive to the stars was sent on the anniversary of the Arecibo message. It's a radio transmission that was beamed towards a distant star cluster in 1974 from the Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico. And the Arecibo message contained information of the planets in our solar system, the structure of DNA, a cartoon-like picture of what human beings look like, which would be very interesting if you could actually get this cartoon image to see how did we actually, you know, describe ourselves in a cartoon way to aliens. Because, you know, I think if the aliens look at a cartoon picture, like, why do they look like cartoons?
Yeah. The Simpsons.
And they come here and they're disappointed. You guys don't look like
you
this.
You don't look like it at all. Yeah, so, and other basic information about us. So, this new message, it's beamed from an antenna in Norway, roughly about 8 hours over a three-day period in October. And it's a lot more simpler and maybe more readily understood by this alien life form. So I don't know though, it's kind of like we may be inviting our doom here, because, you know, we have no idea whether one is, do they even exist? Does anything exist outside of our solar system? And if it does, are we inviting them, you know, to come over here and, hey, you know, look at us. We've got all this cool technology. Look at the iPhone 10. Oh, no, wait, you know, look at the Samsung Galaxy. You know, but for them, they'd be like, this is what I want. And, like, you know, or it could be, you know, a life-saving thing here.
It's 12 light years away. If they have, if they already have an aircraft that can travel here for in 12 light years,
they would have done it already,
they
would have
done it already. Or they, before I advance, they come here and go like iPhone 10. Like, these are antiques back and where we are from. But again, are they could they, are they peaceful? Are they hostile? Are we inviting ourselves? Are we telling there's a buffet over here?
There is a massive buffet.
Are we able to defend ourselves just in case, case. Come here and they're going like, resources.
It's a over 4 billion buffet line here that you can have, right?
Didn't Australia say like a few months ago? I think we covered that Australia has like a space space protection program or something like that. So who knows? I think some people in SETI were also saying that they don't like that the messages are being sent out. You shouldn't be sending like a beacon that there's life here or something like that. You should always be careful about the information you send out into the, you know, into space and stuff.
But it's true. Yeah.
But for all we know, it could be like spam for them. You know, like how we get like spam emails, some guy with a lot of money. So we're just sending like,
but just like spam, there could be hackers as well, right? Who could be sniffing through some of this universal messaging platform, whatever they're called. Like, you know, if you send a information from Earth out to a different star planet, there could be some pirate hackers who just float around the universe waiting for, you know, some message that is just being sent across. And, you know, we could be inviting this
pirate aliens.
Yeah. Which, you know,
too much attention that we don't need.
We don't need. Yeah. Anyways, we'll be back with more stories, and we'll talk. Well, we'll get back to Earth, and we'll talk about China.
Yeah.
And why, you know, there's a lot of money. It's basically just, you know, they're just giving out so much of money to startups that I think a lot of these startups are raising some insane amount of money. But they do have some really cool stories as well.
Yeah.
It's not just a, you know, another startup. Anyways, we'll be right back with Enterprise Biz Bytes. This is Interpol with the Heinrich Maneuver, BFM 89.9.
Be financially minded. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff Sander, together with Arvin and Majida. Now, Majida has a story on why China is raising a whole lot of money.
So much money.
A whole lot of money.
So, you know, for a lot of startups, funding is part of the game, right? It's the difference whether or not your idea takes off or not. Mm. And China is not short of ideas. And I'm going to talk to you about four startups that just got funded and what they're doing with the money. And so we start off with VoicePrint. VoicePrint is a voice recognition and ID security solution. It's called Speakin. The company is called Speakin. The thing is called VoiceDin. And it has raised an undisclosed amount of several million USD in a Series A2 as of this month. And what they want to, and what this company does, Speakin does, is an AI-oriented voice print recognition, and they specialize in development and commercialization of voice print security-related technologies. So these are, you know how some voice recognition looks at content and it tries to pick up words and the pattern from there. What Speakin does, it recognizes the speaker itself and the quirks and the kinks in your voice itself. Because of that, it's used in public security, social insurance, banks, financial companies, and other smart devices. Tencent is a fan of them. And so what they're going to do with this money is expand their existing business as well as accelerate processes and platformization and openness of the product. They're going to just roll this out more, and they've got a lot of money to do that. So voice recognition is one of those things that we have talked about a lot in this show, and how it picks up on who you are to be used as security. And China's got a lot of money now to do this.
The way your voice like dips and then goes up and kind of like...
Also, I think it was just like 2 weeks ago, we did a story on a voice recognition software that could identify you in a crowd. So, you know, even if you're talking in a crowd in let's say a conference, and there's so many different voices, it can identify.
It isolates all the voices. So
you know,
if you have
this
a funny
person
accent,
is talking about that person is talking about this person is talking about that, because everyone has like its own unique voice pattern, and the AI picks it up. It's just mind-boggling crazy.
And now they're getting money to develop that more. So there's another company called Best Bond. They are a youth apartment rental startup. They've just received $19 million in a Series A as of this month to introduce financial services and to facilitate the business. It is apartments for rent by youth people, for the millennials. So they are looking for specific things, you know, gyms, games, reading rooms, video games. And so it is and they are going out to look for places to stay, like Beijing, Shanghai, Nanjing, and Suzhou. So they use this platform to go and find a place to stay. Best Bond plans to use this fund to create a way that tenants can pay via installment and facilitate online marketing to grow their business more. So one you can already go and rent apartments from them. Now you can continue staying with them by paying via installment your rent. So it makes their business more sustainable. It's a diversification of the business. Not only you go and find a place, then you keep on paying them every month also. It's like a subscription for a place to stay.
This is like super interesting because when you pay rent, it's already installments, right? It's like basically an installment every month you're paying for your house, place to stay. It is like a subscription without the subscription model.
So rental is actually traditional.
Because it's still traditional. Like you would still do a banking transfer or you would do a standing instruction to your bank to every end of the month you transfer X amount of money to you because I just managed to get my place rented out and we just have an agreement on a standing instruction and it would be cool if my tenant has a platform that he uses that platform to find for my place and then once we agree he also uses that platform to make the
it's
payments
just integrated
and,
enough
like if he has problems with the apartment like he could contact me using that app itself that would be really cool. And I can see why China has invested a lot of money into this startup.
And if he's a bad, if he doesn't pay on time, then his star rating goes
bad
down in the app. Yeah, bad review. So people know if he's a good or bad tenant.
Enterprise Biz Bytes doesn't just talk about stuff. We give you ideas. Someone out there is now building this app, and you better just give credit.
All ideas come back from China, and it's got funded.
Good tenant, bad tenant.
Bad tenant. That's the app called.
Yeah, that's the app. Yeah.
The
app name
is Good Tenant, Bad Tenant. But that's not all. They've got more.
I'm going to talk about two more. So there's a social networking app called MyMy. They've just received $75 million US in a Series C. And what this company does is that it helps professionals build online personal business brands. So you have a personal brand. It builds a site and your presence for you. It broadens your working relationships and your career presence online. So one of the people who invested as a strategic investor in this company is Zaopin.com, which is a Chinese recruitment firm with over 140 million users. And together, what they're going to do is combine the two services together. So one, you build your personal brand. The other one is you go out looking for people who want to recruit you. I think it is really interesting because now it doesn't only have a lot of money to expand its platform and human resource ecosystem. Now it has access to a lot of these people who are looking for jobs. The strategy between these two companies is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So one of the things for investors out there, if you can actually lend more value to the company that you have. So what companies you have in your portfolio, combined it with something out there that you can invest in, makes both companies more profitable. So that's actually a pretty interesting move made by this company.
And I like how the online reputation thing, because there are a few people doing this. They help companies brand themselves online because some of them are too corporate.
Yeah.
If you see bigger companies and all, they're too rigid online. So they help them give a more human touch to their company on Facebook and social media and stuff.
And finally, we have Future Move. They've just raised $8 million US in a Series A Plus or A2. I think they've raised a Series A before. This is additional funding for them. And this just happened as well. Future Move is a digital and mobile service provider, and they provide they connect our favorite topic together, which is vehicle industries, telematics, car sharing services, big data, mobile applications, and so on. So they connect all these together in the vehicle industry. What they plan to do with the money is to invest in R&D, hardware and software products and their service operating system for digital travels and services and new technologies. It also wants to invest in intelligent digital facilitation for their vehicles. So there is money being put in intelligent or smart vehicles.
If anyone still doubts China is leading the race when it comes to building startups and funding in AI, then this is clearly a sign that you should check out, because these are just four examples we could give. And granted, some of the amounts may be too small because we're spoiled with, tech companies being overvalued, WhatsApp being buy over, a few billion dollars and stuff. But, these are the small players here who are so agile, they're so nimble, and they're so aggressive as well.
These are just the ones being funded this week.
Yeah, this is just this week, by the way.
Yeah.
This is just yesterday. Yesterday it was a Future Move.
Yeah.
The day before it was MyMy, and a few others as well. This was just this week
as
well.
This week.
And and the ideas are like so new. It's like it's not something. It's not like traditional, the old stuff where you have to be like, if you're tech, then you have to be like certain kind of tech. Just be mobile.
Even if the idea has been around, it's an extension of the idea as well. It's pushing beyond, like the rental one as well, right? We see it here in Malaysia as well. We've got, you know, tons of apps and startups that, you know, will help on youth on, you know, finding a place to stay and so forth. But, you know, they're just that. They are an aggregator platform, or they're a search platform where they find information and they sort of, you know, do that aggregation for you and give you your options. But then that's it. That's the end of the road where the app will help you or the startup will help you. You know, these guys, they go beyond that. They actually carry you for, you know, till when you stay on and you pay and all these other apps as
and
well.
And these are very simple ideas. It's not rocket science. You just take a apartment rental and you get the rental service together and you put it together. You get the self-branding platform and the recruitment and you put it together. It's not rocket science, but it's genius. It's simple ideas.
And the thing is, like, you know, I have spoken to a few you know, startups who have done some crazy things here in Malaysia and it didn't really take off, and the reason why is because the market isn't ready for Malaysia. So for Malaysians, you know, we may be skeptical when it comes to, you know, using new apps like this and trying to try out, but in China they want these things, especially when it's built by Chinese you know, local Chinese startup and developers, and it's meant for them. They embrace it, they jump on it. So like, how many of us here would actually jump on, you know, a local platform if the startup decides to build an app? And, you know, it's not many. We don't seem to have that hunger. You know, there's so much of, you know, marketing push that needs to be done, and we really need to shove it into our face. Like, I remember when Grab came out, everyone was still like, I still prefer Uber. And then, like, you know, Grab had to really go aggressive. Like, you know, you see billboards in Bangsa and KLCC, and then, you know, they really ramped it up. And I'm very sure, you know, Grab was you know, spending a lot of money trying to get the word out, trying to get the confidence out. Like, hey, you know, we've got a localized, tailored version of Uber. It's another option for you. You know, you don't have to be, you know, just one fan of this. You know, you need options. And and now you finally see, you know, Grab being, you know, mentioned in that same breath, if not more in the same breath as, you know, as Uber.
As Uber. And we're still struggling with things like e-wallets and all that.
Yeah,
you know, we still haven't picked up that.
But if you go to Genting's recently, when I went there to just check it out, like if you go to Genting's, you see WeChat and Alipay is accepted, and who are those for?
Yeah,
those ain't for us.
it's for the tourists coming in to go to Genting.
China, because you know, they embrace it. They love these things. They want to show off.
We've got Malaysians still skeptical about online banking in that point. So,
which is funny because we still prefer the PME method and, you know, banking in using the, you know, we bank in using a cash deposit machine to another person that we have no idea who we're buying a product of, and we actually go to the cash deposit machine and we bank in the money and then we take a photo of the receipt and we send it over to the seller. We still prefer that method, which actually, you come think of it, that's a lot more riskier than paying online. Because you know, you have no trace. Once you've banked into his account, that's gone. It's gone.
I mean, even stuff like toll gates. I think now we are testing the RFID on kassas and stuff, which I think we've been talking about for 5, 6, 7 years or something like that. So it's slow. It's slow. Locally, it's slow to pick up.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, for those who are looking for that crazy idea, China could be your place to go, because they are spending crazy amount of money. Just this week, they spent more than, what, $200 million funding these companies. Anyways, speaking about China, this is Ocean Colour Scene with a song titled 100 Mile High City, BFM 89.9.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
It's Fun Friday. It is the Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Jeff, Arvin and Majida. Now, Arvin, you've got a story for us, if for those of us who have drones, or even if we don't
if
have
we don't
drones,
have drones, yeah,
we
yeah.
could still take part in this and actually make money.
Yep.
Ah!
So, Swatch, they normally have this the drone racing league championships every year. So this year they're doing it with the Allianz World Championship season. And so they're having tryouts for people who want to join their racing league, right? So if you don't have a drone, Steam has actually released something called the Drone Racing League Simulator.
Cool.
For just $20. So if you download $20 US. So if you download it, and then it gives you like an almost like one-to-one translation simulation of what the actual drone race will be like. Yeah.
Wow.
So it uses the same the race course. It uses the same kind of all the same bends and twists that's going to be at the actual championship.
This is a simulator. It's like the true to life kind of simulator.
True to life simulator. They say it literally is like 1-to-1. So if you can fly your drone in the simulator and you can win and you're good, you know, you practice, then you could actually be selected to enter the 2018 championships by Swatch. So they worked with the simulator guys to design the program, and they're saying that you only need two joysticks to fly this thing. So you need
a controller with two joysticks.
Yeah, a controller, two joysticks. It said it doesn't need like much any kind of like high spec stuff. It just needs like an NVIDIA GTX 650 to run. So that's like
a mid range.
Yeah, mid range. Yeah. It's just normal. Yeah. I think now like any laptop, any notebook you buy comes with
it'll
something.
It'll be more than that. Yeah,
more
definitely
than
more than that.
Yeah. So they actually found its first racer using this game earlier this year. His name is Jacob Jaws Schneider. That's his nickname, Jaws.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jaws
so,
with a Z. Yeah?
With a Z.
Z. Yeah, Jaws.
Yeah. So the tryout.
That's
ends,
his nickname.
His nickname.
His
yeah.
Nickname, right,
I don't know
right.
whether it was because he bit all the other drones in the thing. But they say the tryout ends January 15th, and the top 24 racers will compete in a live tournament on February 3rd after they are selected.
So DRL Simulator, it's available on Steam.
DRL right? Simulator, you go to Steam. Steam is still available here, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah,
it is available
they've,
here.
They've unblocked it.
So you can download it. Now, people are thinking why people want to use the simulator if they have their own drones, because some people own drones here. You can legally own them.
Makes sense to do a simulator, because why would you want to, you know, go out and probably destroy your drone?
Yeah. One, because they're easy to crash.
Just do anything, restart.
Yeah. Drones are expensive also. Yeah. And the difference between the pro drone is that it can go from 0 to 80 in a second, but the consumer drones that we use only goes from 0 to 30. So it's very, very, very different.
So you try on this first. If you're any good, then you go and buy the pro drones.
Yeah. Actually, the pro drones, sometimes some of them actually supply to you. And if you get selected, then there's also a chance for you to win a contract for $75,000.
Wow.
Yeah, if you get selected to play in this.
Well, you know, this drone racing thingy is so new. Have you actually seen any drone race on YouTube before? Have you been part of it? Like, because they actually put cameras within the drone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And you actually have to, you know, sort of maneuver around in like a first person situation where you feel like you're flying the drone.
Yeah.
So you wear one of those, you know, those goggles, those AR goggles, VR goggles, and you maneuver around this very tight course. It's really like just, it gives you headache. Let me say that. It just gives you a headache. But it's so quick, and the response, it just kind of feels like it's Anakin Skywalker when he was young and he was doing
the
one of
pod
those
races.
Pod races.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels so much like that, but in a miniature scales, like really tiny kind of scales, instead of like a big pod racer.
I saw the one where they had in, I think, Dubai. Last year, I think BBC covered it or something, so it was like super
fast. Yes, crazy fast. Yeah.
And it's fun to watch also. I think before this, we were talking about Gran Turismo.
Yeah, so Gran Turismo 5 is like, well, Gran Turismo Sport now is the new one. So Gran Turismo is one of that pioneers in terms of pushing gaming just from being an arcade kind of game into a real simulation game. And, you know, the methods or the depth of things that you can tune in inside Gran Turismo, especially the new one, Sport, is insane. Like, there are some of the things that I don't understand because it requires like a degree in, you know, mechanical engineering or automotive engineering to understand what this actually does, because there's so many graphs and charts and numbers and tweaks that you could do to your car that, you know, really changes the way that, you know, it drives. Especially if you have one of those real bucket seats and you have that simulator machine where you have the steering wheel, the gear knobs and all that. It feels exactly like, you know, 90% of the real thing, you know, besides spending $1 million on a supercar.
On a car,
you just spend maybe a couple of thousand and you could get one of those and you could be really good at it. And that's why Gran Turismo actually have an academy. Mm. They have the Academy of Gran Turismo where they find all these great young talents who are, you know, 15, 16 years old, who are sitting at home in the simulator machines and they're driving around real courses and real cars and tweaking these cars and beating time world records and stuff, they go into this, you know, this academy, mm-hmm. and they train more, even more harder in the simulator world, and then they get put into a real car. I think there's one driver who's like, he hasn't even gotten his real driving license, and he's actually a professional driver for Gran Turismo, the Academy of Gran Turismo. He doesn't have a
because he understands
license.
How the car works.
Yeah, and it's just insane. And I think that's the where future of gaming will change. I think the simulation world has been. We know pilots for many years have been doing simulator trainings because you know it makes sense. Why would you want to risk someone's life?
It's just safer.
It's safer. F1 drivers. Well, how do they train during the winter period and during in between their breaks? And even when they're flying from, I was very lucky to speak to a high kick over Linen a few years ago. And one of the things that he was mentioning to me was that he was saying that, you know, whenever they fly from one place to the other, in between his flights, besides sleeping, they actually go through simulators on their computer. They play simulator games and learn the track and where to brake and, you know, what kind of, you know, the corner, the angles of the corner, where to come in, where to go out, where you can accelerate. They learn all these things on the simulator world just to give them a heads up, that added advantage, that 0.01 second advantage is massive for them.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why, like, before the flight simulator games and all were so popular, but then, and they're not easy. I bought one.
Yeah,
they are not easy to win.
Flight Simulator X was like one of the big things. Yeah.
I could never take off. Like, taking off took me like a month because even if you like pull the joystick a bit too soon, your plane is gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah. It's immediate. All the warning lights will start popping up. Yep, but it was such a fun game. I love the simulator games. Richard has a beef with me because I play so many simulator games, and he's saying that one day I will be playing Work Simulator, and then I'll be like, Rich, like, you don't get it. It's actually like it's so fulfilling because I would never be able to, you know, fly an aircraft in like fly a Boeing A380, for example, or Airbus A380 or a Boeing 777. I would never be able to do that unless, you know, I devote all my time in learning this in the real life, getting, you know, a certificate, going through the courses, which will take years.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in the radio line and there's no way for me that I will do it tomorrow. I could do it tomorrow in a simulator game.
Yeah.
I could even be a train driver the next day because I got Train Simulator. Mm-hmm. And the other game that I really love is Euro Truck Simulator. Because I love to drive trucks, these, you know, big kind of transformer kind of trucks, you know, the Volvo trucks or the Scania trucks, and they're huge, and to drive around, you know, in a game like, you know, Euro Truck Simulator, where you drive from Paris and you go through the Channel Tunnel and you go to the UK and you got to deliver in a certain spot in the UK. I absolutely love it. I love those games.
Yeah, and even the dangerous like roads and all. So you can get drivers to practice before they go out. You know, just give.
I just like turning on the headlights, the wipers. Giving the signal when you turn, and because if you don't give a signal, you get demerit points, and you know you get fines, and then you lose money. It's a fascinating thing. I love simulator games. I don't know why Richard has a beef with me on this.
The real world application actually just really goes beyond it, because I used to work with a company that used to design airports, and what they used to do is we are going to build a simulator of how the runway angle would be if it had this certain wind condition or if it had this certain pressure condition. And before we even design, we have the design, before we even build the airports, we put it into the simulator and we get all these experienced pilots to try to land the aircraft on that certain type of runway to see whether or not it would be safe for one, how easy would it be, and if the pressure changes from one to another or the wind direction changes, would it change the way navigation is done? So it's not just a safe way to train the pilot, but it's a safe way to design buildings and to design not just airports. Actually, if you're going to have a whole urban area plan and you have the road system, you can actually build it up into a simulator and see where the jams would be, which places are prone to accident and things like that.
We just covered the Penang floods, and we talked about Autodesk, and they talk about flood simulator, and you know, you can actually, you know, simulate the entire city in a virtual world, and then, you know, just what happens if there's massive rainfall.
Yeah.
Where would be the first place to, you know, the water will be rising, because they could just just map out the entire city in terms of the, you know, the depth, the you know,
the physics,
everything.
And you can simulate the response that you you have, yeah. when do you have. So where would the evacuation routes be? Where would be the best way to access people to rescue them in buildings which have complicated structures and all?
So we all love simulator games here, right? Okay, so means Richard's the only one. I think we need to get him a holiday simulator when he comes back, because then he will not feel so strange. Anyways, this is Spiral Staircase by Kings of Leon. We'll be right back with podcast recommendations after this. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
All right, it is time for the podcast recommendation. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. So, what do we have, Arvin?
Yeah, so on Tuesday, Christine had an interview with Fried Chilies. So she spoke to Adli Rizal and Hani Ahmad. They are the people behind Fried Chilies. They were just talking about how Fried Chilies started in 1997 and then how it's a company that advertises new places to check out, food places to check out, and then it gives you like new recipes to try. And then they also host like eating events.
Yeah, they did the Nasi Lemak convention last time around as well. Yeah. I went for that, and they've got one coming up soon. Tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow and day after. So, Saturday and Sunday. It's called I Am Legend.
It has to be called
I Am Legend.
So it's a fried chicken event then.
Fried chicken event. If it wasn't, then it'll be super weird. So, I Am Legend is happening at the Ara Damansara LRT station. Mm-hmm. It's Malaysia's first fried chicken festival. It has Klang Valley's top 8 fried chickens as voted by their panel of judges. So, the tickets are staggered, so which is a bit interesting. So, you have to pick your time slots, and each time slot is 4 hours, and you get to try like all 8 sample portions of the chickens, and they say that it's good sample portions. Okay. So it's not like,
I want to know how many fried chicken can you eat in 4 hours? Because you're only given 4 hours, you gotta go out because the next batch is gonna come in, right?
Yeah, so you're given 4 hours, you get to try all 8 of this of these fried chickens. So
they should have like a record, should just keep track of you know, which is the person that at the most fried chicken in that space of 4 hours.
Have like an eating contest. Yeah. And then if Christine wins.
When Christine wins.
It's a lifetime supply of that fried chicken. Why not?
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So if people want to find out who the 8 are, then they can go to I Am Legend, AYAMLEJEN 2017.ptix.com. Then you can get your tickets. Their tickets are about $58 now for the 4 hours. Not too bad.
Not too bad.
There's 8 different types of fried chicken, and they are the best ones in Klang Valley.
According to their judges. So, you know, 8 fried chickens. If let's say 1 fried chicken is 10 ringgit, that's 80 ringgit. So, it's a good value. Anyways, what else do we have, Majida?
On Wednesday, I spoke to Peter Chai Neil de Kraisak. You call him Neil. He's a social enterprise from Thailand. Now, what's interesting is that Thailand is the rice bowl of the world, right? Mm-hmm. But they've got among some of the most poorest farmers in the world. So what his social enterprise does is try to bridge this gap to get the farmers to be better compensated for the work that they do by introducing this new high-grade organic seed for jazzberry rice, which is better in nutrition and is better for the environment as well. So his social enterprise works in this ecosystem. It helps farmers to grow better. It's more high-grade rice, so they get earn more, and what they do is they market this out to the world. Actually, they're opening up a Hong Kong distributor now. And it's really interesting because it started with the intention to help poor farmers in Thailand, and now everybody is getting a better life. So I spoke to him about how he started his social enterprise, some of the obstacles he went through, how hard was it to get the first farmer on board, because rice, you can't plant a seed and harvest it tomorrow. You need at least a few months, so the farmer had to commit. So it's a really interesting interview on how successful he is now.
Oh, if you really like rice, then you got to listen to that interview. I love rice. And the thing is, like, it's so funny. It's like the first recommendation was about fried chicken.
Yeah, and then you
and
have
then
rice.
We've got rice.
His rice is purple, by the way.
Rice. So we've got fried chicken interview, and then we've got a rice interview. Unfortunately, I can't give the condiments to this.
So we're not building up.
So we're not building up in the dish here. So I got to give you a digital transformation interview. So I interviewed, but it was very interesting still, because I interviewed Sudev Banga, the managing director of IDC ASEAN, and IDC actually had their first ever digital transformation awards to honor the achievements of those organizations who have successfully planned and executed the digital transformation, which is in one or many areas of their business through the use of disruptive technologies within the region, Asia Pacific. The winners, the list is out. There is also three Malaysian nominees here and also winners in this category. So do check that out, because I know a lot of companies, I read a lot of stats about a lot of companies are confused when they talk about digital transformation and the strategies to go ahead. This will give you a very good indication of like sort of where to begin and how to execute the plans, and also just what can you do. Since 2018 is just around the corner, it's about time that you start talking about, you know, your transformation journey. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good interview to check out. Anyways, coming up next at 1 o'clock is the Breakfast Grill replay. RHL Ventures, which is we had Raja Hamza Abidin Raja Nongchik. He's the managing partner of RHL Ventures. They were founded on the wealth pulled together by the children of some of Malaysia's biggest tycoons. The Young Venture Capital plans to set out attract outside capital and grow the firm into a leading independent investment group. So later on, at 1 o'clock, you'll find out how they're funding in startups in Southeast Asia and also the challenges that his millennial team faces. Now, if you missed any parts of this show, you can download the podcast on the BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store and also Google Play. My name is Jeff Sandhu.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Majida Hashim.
Enjoy the lovely weekend and download DRL Simulator and have fun with that. That's on Steam. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.